The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate grants them. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
Next Sunday, we'll see thousands of families at the Lincolnshire Showground. But why?
It's very, very hands-on. All the exhibitors provide hands-on interactive activities. So there's lots of fun, lots of live entertainment, activities, demonstrations for families to get involved with.
Nominations are open for the British Farming Awards. Could you be the next big winner?
Well, the British Farming Awards is a real chance to celebrate our fantastic farming industry, the pride, the passion, the enthusiasm, dedication and talent that really goes into producing the nation's food.
And we're off to the Manchester Marathon and the livestock and grain markets and the fields for a crop report and some timely agronomy advice.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Another wet and windy one then. More of the same this week by the looks of it. We'll take a look at the forecast at the end of the programme. This is the Farming Programme podcast for April the 7th, 2024. Hello, I'm Steve Orchard. In the news this week, talking of the weather, the mild and wet conditions we've seen for the start of the year could, according to Adama, create the perfect storm for barley yellow dwarf virus infection in spring barley. Pretty much the same situation for Septoria in wheat. And controlling sclerotinia in oilseed rape will be much more important this season due to the reduced rapeseed area in the UK. Much more on this with Sean Sparling, our crop doctor, in a few minutes. Good news for the poultry sector. The UK has self-declared zonal freedom from highly pathogenic avian influenza following its worst ever outbreak, which began back in 2021. The UK is now in line with World Organization for Animal Health rules, currently having no outbreaks of bird flu in poultry or other captive birds, with the current risk to poultry as low. However, DEFRA warned that the disease continues to be found in wild birds in Great Britain and across Europe, with outbreaks occurring in poultry and other captive birds in several countries across Europe. Your views are requested as a consultation is underway on plans around hydrogen-powered tractors. The government is considering allowing their use on roads and fields in the UK, and you can have your say on gov.uk. Just search hydrogen-powered tractors and it's the first article. Mandatory biodiversity net gain requirements for small developments have now gone live, 2 months after the initial rollout. This includes residential developments with 10 or more dwellings, or where the site is greater than 0.5 hectares. It's also where a non-residential site is less than 1 hectare. And finally, congratulations to now Sir Mark Spencer, the Farming Minister, knighted in the recent surprise honours list. Two big events take place next Sunday. The Manchester Marathon is on. Why are we interested in that? Well, you'll find out later in the programme. Also, next Sunday, Countryside Links returns for the 8th year to the Lincolnshire Showground. A great chance for youngsters and families to learn about their food and where it comes from. Head of charity, Rosie Crust. It's grown a bit over those 8 years, hasn't it?
Massively so. I was looking back, actually, at what we did in 2015 and 2016. And it's really grown. Each year we try to increase sort of exhibitors and offer more for families to come and see and enjoy and do. So yeah, keeps growing.
For those who don't know anything about it, there must be the odd one or two. What is Countryside Links? It's aimed at the kids, isn't it? And the families.
Yeah, so Countryside Links is a family educational event focused on food farming in the countryside. So basically there's lots of different zones where children and families can get engaged and inspired and enthused by everything to do with, food farming in the countryside. So it's very, very hands-on. All the exhibitors provide hands-on interactive activities. So there's lots of fun, lots of live entertainment, activities, demonstrations for families to get involved with.
Is it educational? Is it fun, or is it a combination of the two?
I think it's definitely a combination of both. So, for example, in the food zone, children learn where their food comes from, but then they have lots of fun making dishes with Lincolnshire produce, renowned chefs and things. So it is learning, but it's also learning in a fun way. And that's how children learn best, by doing and by having lots of fun.
And plenty of animals. There's always animals.
Oh, the animals. The farmyard zone, that's one of my favourite areas. So we have from little rabbits and guinea pigs all the way up to cows and sheep. So it's a petting area. This year, the new thing, we've got sheep walking. We've got alpaca walking. So yeah, the animals, there's lots of animals for children to come and meet and see their friendly faces.
I did try and interview some alpacas a couple of years ago. I think they weren't having any of it till I gave them some food. No. Then they were all over me. It's not just a petting zoo, though. They can actually understand and learn about how to look after the animals, how they feed, what kind of environment they need to be in.
Absolutely. And so one example, we have the British Pig Association. They come and they're bringing 8 different breeds of pig. So you get to see the different breeds, but then also learn about what the different breeds are, what their characteristics are, what they look like.
And it enables kids, as you say, to understand where their food really comes from, not just the packet that comes from the supermarket.
No, absolutely. So it's learning, where the food comes from, the job that farmers and producers do, that journey from getting food from the field to our fork. So it's, the whole process of just learning where the food comes from.
Is this aimed at any particular age of children?
So Countryside Links, it's a perfect family day out for sort of the primary age children. So sort of 2 to 11-year-olds, I would say, is the perfect age range.
OK, and knowing what we know about the Great British weather, some of it's indoors, isn't it?
Yeah, so we are lucky at the showground. We have lots of lovely outdoor green space, but then we do have indoor space. So in the EXO and Epic Centre, we've got the cookery workshops, the NAFAS Floral Art Show. We've got the Explore It Zone, the Make It Zone, the Farmyard Zones undercover. And then some of these zones, Tractor Zone, Heritage Zone, Sports Zone, that's outside. But, bring your wellies, bring your waterproof coats and just have lots of fun. And actually, when it does rain, the children just love splashing around in the puddles outside on the showground. So, lots of indoor and outdoor.
And there's stuff for the mums and dads as well.
Yeah, so for the mums and dads, we have lots of general trade. So you can buy lots of Lincolnshire produce and goods. New for this year, we are in collaboration with the North Midlands area of the NAFAS, and they're bringing their flower show and floral art show to us. That's in the Epic Centre. So there's over 100 beautiful, creative floral masterpieces for people to look at. So that's really a lovely thing for adults to go and have a look at. But then even like the Countryside Ring timetable, we have the sheepdog demonstration, Hawkeye falconry, the Basset Hounds, and the BMX. So even just entertainment for families, from grandparents through to the little ones in the pushchair, will all enjoy it.
Brilliant. And just remind us then when and where we go for information and tickets.
Yeah, so Countryside Links is on Sunday, the 14th of April at the Lincolnshire Showground. It's 10 till 4. If you go onto our Showground website and then click onto Countryside Links, there's lots more information about the event on there. And there's also a link to buy tickets. So that's lincolnshireshowground.co.uk/countrysidelinks.
If somebody needs to, could they buy tickets or get entrance on the day, or do they have to do it in advance?
Absolutely. Yeah, no. So advance tickets are at a discounted price, but we do, of course, offer tickets on the day. So if you wake up on Sunday morning and think we'd love to go, then come along and we'd love to welcome you.
Lovely. Look forward to it. I shall see you there. Thanks ever so much, Rosie.
Thank you, Steve. See you on Sunday.
Time to get a crop report now and consider all those potential infections I mentioned earlier. But he's got a spring in his step. Welcome independent agronomist Sean Sparling. Morning, Sean.
Yes, morning, Steve. What can I say? I think the only good thing about the clocks going forward last weekend is that we've lost an hour of rain. I'm not going to talk about the rain. Just let's be positive. It's warmer, it's windier, so hopefully there's a change on the cards to let us get a bit done. Oilseed rape, few more flowers shown than last week. And with this increasing temperature, light leaf spots got a bit of a shift on. Quite a lot of fields still to receive any fungicide, of course, so light leaf spot becoming quite visible in those fields, particularly in the more susceptible varieties. Prothioconazole and tebuconazole pretty good in their own rights against light leaf spot, and because we're now showing flowers, you could combine that application with a protectant fungicide like azoxystrobin to coat those petals with a protectant fungicide in these wet conditions so that as they fall, they don't allow the botrytis or the other grey moulds in. And by doing that, then let the sclerotinia get established. So protect the petals, you protect the stems by default, because we are now in the sclerotinia timing, really. Once those flowers come out, that risk of sclerotinia increases if they're left unprotected. But plenty of these fields still at the green bud stage, so you will need to monitor and assess each field on its own merits for disease, pollen beetle, etc., and treat them accordingly and in a timely way. Prothioconazole, by the way, has no growth regulatory effect on oilseed rape or cereals, but if you apply tebuconazole, alcohol at more than 50% dose, you will get a PGR effect from that. But to be quite honest, once the crop gets to this point of the season, it starts to flower, that growth regulatory effect is pretty minimal. Winter wheat, winter barley, as I said last week, most fields at or around growth stage 30 now, so T0 spray is going on widely, primarily concerned with nutrient correction, root manipulation, and giving these crops a bit of oomph, and some yellow rust management in my case too. Tebuconazole, azoxystrobin, paraclostrobin, all capable of dealing with the rust. You don't have to, and nor do you want to, spend a fortune at this growth stage. Some of the odd earlier drill bits of wheat already showing growth stage 31 on the main stem, incidentally. Big variation though in the speed of varieties setting off in the spring. Dorsum much slower than some, and a little bit steadier way as we've got used to. And there's a lot of dorsum out there, and the recent cool wet weather means that the yellow rust is quite widespread, leaf emergence is slow, and the yellow rust pretty obvious in the more susceptible varieties now. Septoria widespread too, as you'd expect from these conditions. So think about your T1 timing as leaf 3 emerges in 2-3 weeks time, and tailor your T1 by variety and drilling date to deal with that septoria risk in a couple of weeks time when T1 is upon us. Septoria everywhere you look really, even in some of the less susceptible varieties, but much less concerning in varieties with good scores like Champion, Redwold, Mayflower, Extase than it is in Dorsum, Gleam, Cranium. You know the scores, so get your plans in place now. Netblotch and Rinko easy to find as well in winter barley, but a decent T1 will sort those out as well in a couple of weeks. Still bits of blackgrass and brome being tidied up with Broadway Star, Pacifica Plus, etc. in winter wheat, but just watch the temperatures and the proximity to other herbicides to make sure you minimise any adverse crop effects and you maximise the efficacy and get it onto a dry leaf. But don't expect too much from anything that's applied now, particularly if it's going on to great big established stuff. If you do happen to go drilling, as I'm sure you all will at some point, we always do, and there has been a little bit done on the Kinderland, although too blooming wet again by the middle of the week once again, the question I'm most frequently being asked now is how late can we go? And the answer to that isn't particularly straightforward. It depends a lot on the weather over the next few weeks. It depends on what you're putting in the ground. Arguably, it's getting plenty late enough for spring wheat and spring beans, although last year I had some of both of those put in around the 10th, 15th of April, and they did okay. Spring barley, oats, peas, linseed can all be drilled with plenty of success right through April, although the yields and the quality will decline the further you get through the month. But you're asking crops who need 150 days to grow ordinarily to do all of that in 120 days. So clearly something has to give. But if we can get these in the ground in the next couple of weeks, they should be okay. But of course, that does depend upon them going in well into decent seed beds. So back to basics with cultivations, and back to basics really, where as long as you haven't heard the cuckoo, you're not going to be too late. Although that is a couple of weeks later than I dare go, to be honest. Where you've got pre-emergence herbicide wrecks, then there are a few things you need to remember. Barley and peas will not be mauled in, so pay attention to seed beds and the subsoil issues with both of those. Make sure you get your seed deep enough so it's safe from a depth protection point of view. Make sure the seed's covered and not likely to be hit with the herbicide. In the case of flufenicet, pendimethalin, sinmethalin, triolate, that can be fatal to spring wheat and spring barley seeds. Similarly for spring beans and peas, make sure they're drilled deep enough and they're well covered, and for the same reasons. And if you've got a wreck for peas and beans, you've got that for a reason, so make sure you get it on within the time specified. You can't put most of these pre-em herbicides on post-emergence to pretty much all of the spring crops, and our options are more than a little bit limited post-emergence in most of those crops too. So if you can drill, make sure you can get it sprayed. Odd bits of sugar beet going in the ground now on the lighter land with this warmer, windier weather. That's going to help our beet drilling efforts immensely and dry things out a bit. There's no desperate hurry to drill your sugar beet, so there's no need to force it in. Drilling anything well but a little bit later than usual is always going to be preferable to drilling it badly just to get it in early. Sugar beet drilled in May last year yielded pretty much the same as the stuff we put in that cold, wet March. Drill any cruiser treated seed first to get the most out of that aphid protection. They'll be flying from about Wednesday, as has been predicted. We're already picking up wing buds forming on Mises persici nymphs out here. There's so much greenbridge this year where they're all readying themselves, but there's still beet to lift, of course. They'll be in there. There's oilseed rape crops. They'll be in there. Sugar beet spoil heaps all over the place. So try and manage your on-farm hygiene and destroy any sugar beet plants on those spoil heaps and be prepared for battle, really, because I think it's going to be a battle royal this year. And for sugar beet, as with spring cereals, try and get at least half the nitrogen and the sulfur on in the seed bed or immediately after drilling so that it's there for the crop as it comes through. So that'll do. It's warmer, it's windier, it's almost like the middle of April. No sign of the swallows, but it is starting to feel a little bit like it should this time of year. Let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks, Sean. Sean Sparling, Sparling Agronomy Services, back with more next week. Nominations are open for the British Farming Awards. Hear all about them and find out who will be cheering on at next week's Manchester Marathon. Plus the market reports and weather next.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
This is the Farming Programme podcast. I'm Steve Orchard. Do you or somebody you know do an extra special job in farming? Do you go the extra mile and all those other cliches? Time to get recognised, as nominations are open now for this year's British Farming Awards. Olivia Midgley is editor of Farmers Guardian, the organiser, here to tell us all about the awards.
Well, the British Farming Awards is a real chance to celebrate our fantastic farming industry, the pride, the passion, the enthusiasm, dedication and talent that really goes into producing the nation's food and really bolstering British agriculture's place as a world leading food producing nations. These awards are all about just celebrating that and showcasing it.
I mean, let's face it, we could do with it, couldn't we, with things like No Farmers, No Food campaigns and this kind of thing, which all need our support. We need to really celebrate and show off the wonderful work that so many people do in farming. Do you have to be nominated or can you enter? How does it work?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Stephen. And I think these awards, as you say, are coming at exactly the right time when people just need to, think about all the fantastic stuff, all the innovation and all the positive signals that are around that we're so proud of our farming industry. You can certainly nominate yourself, and we would definitely urge you to do that. But you can also nominate, your neighbour, or you might have had a visit to a farm recently that you think, gosh, they really deserve some sort of accolade. The entry process we think is fairly straightforward, and just head to the British Farming Awards website to have a look at that. But this year what we're doing different is we're having an entry guidance day, which takes place on Friday, April the 12th. And that's designed to assist you in navigating the entry process. It offers guidance on crafting a compelling submission, which obviously is really important because our judges get so many entries. Now, to reserve your time slot, just email marketing@britishfarmingawards.co.uk and they'll get back to you and put a date in the diary. So we couldn't make the entry process simpler, I think, Steve. So hopefully that helps some of your listeners.
Which is really good news. Sometimes these things can be a bit complicated, can't they? It's not just for farmers, though, is it? You've lots of different categories that people can enter in.
We have. We've got 16 award categories, including the Farmers Guardian Farming Hero Award, which obviously recognises a champion of British agriculture. But we've also got the Agricultural Influencer of the Year Award, and that's a new one for 2024. And it's all about recognising farmers they use social media to educate non-farming audiences, to really raise the profile of agriculture. And as you know, in this world of social media, that is so important. And these people who are really, with millions of followers between them, they're really driving that interest in food and farming and trying to show people, who are really seeking honesty about what goes into their food. And I think a lot of these influencers do that so wonderfully.
And there's even a category for the auctions and markets and cafes too.
That's it, yeah. So our Marks the Heart Awards, Farmers Guardian absolutely has always championed auction marts and the role of the auction marts in rural communities and the value that they bring to the agricultural landscape. So they'll be taking place as well. So I think one of the most hotly anticipated awards on the night is the Auction Mart Cafe of the Year, which always we start with that because it really gets the crowd going. And I don't think you hear louder cheers than for the best cafe.
Yeah, I remember interviewing the winners last year at the NEC, and there was quite a big battle for that one, wasn't there?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's definitely, the cafes are definitely a very important part of farming life, particularly when you head to the auction, yeah.
Now, you've got quite a lot of sponsors for the event. They're listed on the website. Morrison's, though, is the key sponsor, isn't it?
Yeah, so Morrison's is a true backer of British farming, and we do a lot of work with the supermarket over the course of the year, and really pleased to say that Morrison's are back as our headline sponsor for the British Farming Awards, which is just, you know, incredible for us. And I think it just shows how much, you know, they value food and farming. It's absolutely critical to their supply chain, and just great that they're involved with these awards.
Absolutely. And once again, there is a charity connection, isn't there?
Yeah. So once again, so this is the second year, we're supporting My Name's Doddy Foundation. And this is the charity that was set up in memory of rugby legend and farmer Doddy Weir, who farmed up in the Scottish Borders. You know, there's so much around MND at the moment, which is, you know, dedicated to finding a cure for motor neuron disease. This charity, we raised a lot of money for them last year. And I'm really pleased that they were once again going to raise plenty of money for that charity this year as well.
Brilliant. And probably the first place to go is this advice day that you got coming up on April the 12th. But if you want to just give us an idea of where we can go for more information, please, Olivia.
Yep. So just head to our website, which is britishfarmingawards.co.uk.
Well, really looking forward to being there once again in October. Olivia Midgley, editor of Farmers Guardian, thanks for joining us on the Farming Programme again this morning.
Thank you.
Next Sunday is the return of the Manchester Marathon. Why do I keep mentioning this? Well, friend of the Farming Programme, Lincolnshire farmer Charles Anion, will be running it. Despite your April Fool post on X last week, you are going to be in Manchester this time next week.
Absolutely. Yeah, this time next week, Steve, I shall be on, once again, the start line of Manchester Marathon. Really looking forward to that. Well, the first few miles anyway. The remainder gets a bit painful, but yeah, really glad to be doing it once again.
How's the training been going?
The training's been going really well, because obviously due to farming conditions, we haven't really been flat out tractoring. So yeah, no, training started in earnest on January the 1st, this marathon block. And I've run a fair few miles, and it's been a great stress reliever with all the weather-related problems as well. And in good shape.
Good. And yeah, every cloud has a silver lining, as they say. So Manchester's a fairly flat course. You've done it before, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done it a couple of times. I did Leeds as well last year. It's it's a pleasant marathon. You do get to a hill after about 17 miles. Not a big hill, but after 17 miles, it might as well be Mount Everest. But it's a great marathon. Great support from the people of Manchester. I think it's the fourth biggest marathon in Europe. And really looking forward to getting it done.
All right. You're looking forward to getting it done, and you will get it done. But there's a reason why you're doing it.
Absolutely. Every marathon, this will be my fifth marathon. And every marathon I run I run under the banner of Marathon for Mental Health. Obviously, I'm very proud to be an ambassador for the Farming Community Network, who work, you know, closely with the wonderful Lincolnshire Rural Support Network we have here. I've always raised money before, but everybody's been so generous over the last few years, and I just thought this year to give everybody a year off, and, you know, it becomes more difficult year on year. So I will just be raising an awareness and getting people through the marathon, hopefully getting people thinking about their mental health, watching out for their mental health, watching out for the mental health of others around them. So obviously we've had, you know, a tragedy here in Lincolnshire recently. Yeah, just getting people talking, getting people thinking. And by running under the Marathon for Mental Health banner, hopefully in my FCN running vest, it will get people, you know, get people talking, which is essential nowadays, especially with the difficulties affecting farming, all sectors of farming at the moment.
Absolutely. And as you rightly say, it's not just about collecting money. Important though that is, the word needs to be spread, and the further it can be spread, the better.
Absolutely. I always raise money for the FCN, and that money goes to their helpline and everything. But it's just a simple case of pointing out to people that friends, neighbours, partners are sometimes the best counsellors, and you just talk to someone, talk to anyone, and, you know, together, hopefully, we will be able to break the stigma which surrounds mental health.
Brilliant. And are you going to be wearing orange shoes?
I'm going to be wearing the same shoes I've run for two marathons in, which I bought in Australia last year. They are blue and orangey. So, they're my magic shoes, as Forrest Gump would say. So, really looking forward to it.
Excellent. What number are you?
19205.
Right, 19205. We'll keep an eye out for you. Charles, all the very best of luck next week. I'm sure you'll smash it. What's your target time?
My target time, well, I managed 3 hours 38 last year. I am going to see how daring I get on the day, but one day, whether it's next week or not, one day I'd love to go sub 3:30. So we'll see how we get on.
I'm sure you will. Fingers crossed. All the very best. We'll be thinking of you next Sunday. Cheers, Charles.
Thanks, Steve. Cheers.
Lynx FM Farming. Market reports.
Starting with livestock from Masons Rural at Louth, auctioneer Ed Middleton. Morning, Ed.
Good morning, Steve. This week, prime heifers all in average 281.7 pence per kilo, and prime steers all in average 286.81 pence per kilo. An excellent entry in terms of quality. Top spot this week went to GNS Paul of Borough La Marche at £1,977.35. Moving on to the sheep report. This week, prime new season lambs had an SQQ of 306.12 pence per kilo and sold to £150 for JV and SA Ranyard of Ashby by Partney. On to the prime hogs. This week we had an SQQ of a fantastic 402.39 pence per kilo and an all-in average pounds per head of £182.24. Top spot this week of Scrivelsbury Farms Limited of Horncastle at £220. And in the pence per kilo were G and DM Howsam of Stickney at 484 pence per kilo. This week we had a small entry of ewes and lambs from Woodthorpe Hall Farms, who sold shearlings with lambs at foot, topping at £100 per life. On to the cull ewes, possibly one of the dearest trades for cull ewes Louth has ever seen, not to mention a record breaker with 47 ewes over £200. This week we had an overall average of £172.07. Taking the trophy this week were Scrivelsbury Farms Limited of Horncastle at an eye-watering £270. As ever, we business as usual again on Monday for all prime cattle, cool cows, on all classes of sheep. We look forward to seeing you then. Any entries, please give me a call. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Ed. And with a review on some guide prices from the grain market, Open Fields' Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Steve. It has appeared that the market, a lot like half of the workforce in the UK, is having an extended Easter break with a few dull days this week. The main global news of the current week has come from Mother Russia and the story regarding two Russian companies, RAF, Russia's largest grain trading house, and Aston, another in-house grain trader who, it was reported, were being stopped exporting Russian produce due to phytosanitary issues. This would normally mean bugs to you and me. Why would Russia stop the export of their own goods when they need the cash? Are they really going to hold on to the grain and default on the sale, hoping that the value will increase? None of it really makes much sense. The market has not reacted to it in any way, and we've heard reports that everything is sorted and there was no story to begin with. This is something the global market should be aware of, though. If the reason for the delay was indeed because of quality, or for another equally plausible reason, it's important because the world market is priced to receive the cheapest wheat in the world, Russian. If there is any issue with supply, then the market will react to this. And looking through the other stories from the last couple of days, there is no fresh bearish news which would point to us trading £2 lower all day on Thursday. The French have updated their crop condition, 66% good to excellent, which is the same as last week. It remains in the worst shape since 2020. We are seeing more global demand appearing in terms of international tenders. Domestically, we continue to see spot demand from the ethanol plants in the north of the county as they look to take advantage of higher ethanol demand. And to state the obvious, it is once again raining in the UK. our 2024-25 crop is getting smaller and smaller by the day. Providing this demand continues, and with the thought that some wheat will be rolled into new crop, this could aid values further as we get closer towards the end of the season. Whilst this is certainly possible, we mustn't forget about the wheat which sits in UK futures stores, which are dotted around the country and are likely to be tendered in May. There will be some stiff penalty rents for those who end up owning it but choose not to move it, so this will, in many cases, take priority over farm grain. For mainly this reason, I would quietly keep moving old crop when the market gives us a good opportunity. As someone who strives for logic, I've not seen much of it in the last day or two, but I've not turned rampantly bullish just yet. Realistically, we have 3.5 months to move old crop produce on the basis that we don't want to carry it. There will be opportunities, I'm sure, but we will need to keep going. Only the very brave will be prepared to sit on it until late June or early July. Let's hope for some more life next week. We have had some slightly warmer feed barley prices, some slightly warmer feed bean prices, and some slightly lower rapeseed prices after a torrid Thursday on the Retief, for no reason at all. So, some guide prices for this week, circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, April, 170 to 180, November, 190 to 200, with Group 1 milling premium still holding at £60 to £70. Feed barley, May, 145 to 155, November, 160 to 170, and finally oilseed rape, February, 345 to 355, and July, 355 to 365. As usual, please do call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Well, it's looking wet and windy again. Definitely April showers and definitely plenty of them. Winds all week will be south to southwest and gusty up to 40 or 50 miles per hour some days. Showers, some heavy most days, certainly for the first half of the week, and temperatures about what you'd expect for the time of year. Highs in the lower teens Celsius and overnight lows of 7 or 8. Next week on the online podcast edition of the Farming Programme, we'll consider many people's favourite Sunday roast as the Great British Beef Week gets closer, plus the week's farming news, weather, crop and market reports, and timely agronomy advice on the Farming Programme. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, BSI ISO 9001 accredited.